Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can play against and make us ask quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, I think I'm a convert to the Mississippi State way of thinking. I believed we could go 8-0, and with minutes of the opening kickoff, my faith was rewarded. What convicted you Saturday night in Tuscaloosa?
Man, you and I did not need the ball game to see this writing on the wall. I think between your paper tiger comment and just me looking at the schedule and who they had played to get to 7-0, we just kind of knew this was two very different 7-0 teams going into this ball game. And it was pretty apparent when it was 21-0 early on.
Yeah, we scored on our first three possessions to make it 21-0. We added a field goal. The Vegas line was 24, which, you know, that's a big number. But we had 24 at half. What was interesting is we scored on our first three possessions, went up 21-0. Then we seemed to stall out. I think we punted on our next three possessions and we dominated the field position. You know, they would punt to us at about the 50 and we'd punt to them to about the 5. But you know, they couldn't get out of the hole and we couldn't drive it down to kick a field goal. That was a frustrating few minutes there.
Man, frustrating is an understatement. I have to say that as happy as I was after the Tennessee game, and it was the most complete game we had played, the second quarter was the most frustrating quarter of football this season. We were up 21-0 with 12 minutes left in the second quarter. And to your point, because I went back and specifically looked at those third down conversions in the second quarter. And we started at the, you know, thanks to Cyrus Jones, who had some really good punts there, punt returns in the second quarter. They started at the 19 after we were up 21-0. We then started at the 47-yard line and gained 3 yards.
Yep.
We started at the 32, and then we started our 43. And what's really frustrating is that on two of those three series in the second quarter, we had a 3rd and 7. We tried to throw a 4-yard pass, didn't complete it. We had a 3rd and 6. We throw a pass to Cooper for 5 yards. And you know, I know yards after the catch, but you know how much I love not throwing it to the sticks, especially on third down. You can throw it to the, you know, give them space on 1st and 2nd down and let them make something happen. But on third down, you throw it to the sticks. Actually, you throw it 2 yards past the stick. So if they have to come back to the ball, they're still going to get a first down. And so 3rd and 7, you throw a 4-yard cross. 3rd and 6, you throw it 5 yards. That was very frustrating because we should have at least gotten 2 field goals on 2 of those 3 series in the second quarter.
It was definitely frustrating, especially when we line up almost in field goal position, a first down or two, and we're kicking field goals. I am tempted, as sometimes I'll do, to give a little bit of credit to the opponent. You know, they were down. They got kind of, you know, sucker punched just right to start the game. Showed a little bit of resolve, a little bit of backbone. But at the same time, though, I think it's execution on our side. How much of it do you attribute to maybe Amari Cooper getting a little banged up?
I don't think I attribute it to Amari Cooper getting banged up. I think it's the human nature of young kids. And they showed this. They showed this against Missouri. You know, they're still young. There's still a lot of inexperienced guys. I actually would contribute this more to D. Milner, honestly. And what I mean by that is that, you know, it was 3rd and 7. We try to complete to Jones, no dice. We get 3 whopping yards. We then punt the ball. D. Milner, you know how Saban loves to have his starters on the gunners, interferes, catching interference. Yep. With the fair catch, 15 yards. They get the ball on the 21-yard line. And then from there, we seem out of sync. Our defense actually continued to play very well. But offensively, we just it was predominantly the third down. I mean, it was very makeable. It was third and six, third and seven, third and five. These were not hard plays to convert. And we talked about this last week. At least get 2 or 3 yards and you're in field goal range.
Right. No, and I think McCarron looked good. I think our running game was a little bit out of sorts. And so there again, I'm tempted to give at least a little bit of credit to their defensive line. You know, both Yeldon and Lacy had, you know, 10 carries, Yeldon 84 yards, Lacy, unfortunately, only 26. And so, neither of the running backs really burst open or broke for some long runs. And I think that helped keep us bottled up on the inside as well.
Well, that could be true. I want to go back to Cooper for a second because you and I talked as we were watching it live. You know, Cooper was noticeably limping.
Sure.
And so when I went back and watched the tape, I was like, okay, I've got to find out when he got hurt. And surprisingly, he got hurt on the third play of the game, third offensive play.
Mm-hmm.
Literally on the third play of the game, we throw out in the flats to the right side, Kevin Norwood, who's not one of our more physical blockers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed this in other games. That's just not typically been his role. We've got some guys who have been hurt that is their roles. Namely, Cooper was the physical guy out there for DeAndre White to run that play.
Yep.
Well, now that White's not in there and Cooper's running the play, Norwood doesn't go after the guy. He kind of lays back. The guy pushes into him. Next thing you know, Cooper has nowhere to go. He starts spinning. Guy falls on his ankle with his helmet. He immediately goes back to the huddle. Camera does a good job on TV. He raises his hand. He comes out. Marvin Shin comes in. And so the third play of the game, you don't see him again the whole series there on that first touchdown, but you see him come back the very next series. And they even talked on the TV about some technology that we have with some freezing thing, which I think you commented on that we had done to a different player earlier this season where they spray some cold substance on him. It's like an immediate ice pack.
Yeah.
So apparently that's why he was able to come back out there. But he got hurt on the third play of the game. Did you realize it was so early?
I didn't realize it was so early. I knew it was early in the game, and it looks like a little hair dryer that we're using that blows cold air. We did that for McCarron when he's injured on the field at Missouri, and it just looks funny. It looks like they're just kind of hair drying his leg, but yeah, that, you know, obviously just kind of kidding on that. There's some technology there involved, and it became pretty clear to me that we were using Amari as almost as a decoy. The defense started to play off of him. We really weren't going to him. He was limping noticeably, and it's one of those things where you have to believe that they're telling him and the medical staff is saying, look, he can't hurt it anymore. But there's something just visceral about watching a player limping around and hobbling around to think, man, get him off that ankle. Get him off of that sore spot. You know, especially we're going to need everyone as healthy as they can be next week. And we'll talk about that. But it was pretty clear that he was being used for a decoy. But then he seemed to get a little bit better.
He caught two passes in the second quarter. Yeah,
he finished with 47 yards receiving, which, you know, granted, he's been putting up over 100 the last couple of weeks. That's not going to happen every week. And so 47 is a respectable for an Alabama receiver number.
No, it is. But to your point, when the play action pass was working so well on those first three touchdown drives, you know, he and Kenny Bell both caught good crossing patterns for big plays. And, you know, just goes to show you what kind of separation he's able to get, because even on his 25-yard completion, he had 2 or 3 yards on his guy, and
sure,
he's sitting there running with a bum leg. What jumped out at you else on offense? Did you notice in the game how quickly AJ McCarron took off his knee brace?
Yeah, he did. It was back on a little bit later. If he's, it makes, it's a, you know,
that surprised
I don't,
me, I guess, is my
I guess
question.
I want to be a little bit nervous about that. But then there's another part of me that says, you know, if the staff is approving it, if he's comfortable, then, you know, I'm not in the locker room. I'm not with the medical staff. So I don't know all the particulars and details. And so I have to look at that, you know, some of that on face value and say, well, that's probably a pretty good sign. It also could speak to the fact that if he's a little bit nervous about some of the blocking, because he did get hurt again due to a missed block. If he's a little bit nervous and he feels like he needs to take that off to be a little bit more mobile, then maybe that's the counter argument there.
Well, you know, Todd Blackledge covered this on the TV commentary, but it was on that scramble on that first series where they, before they went for it on fourth and a half a yard, he was, you know, running out of bounds, and the camera zooms in and he's sitting there screaming something at the sideline. And while they're having to bring the chains all the way across the field, the camera zooms in and he's taking it off right that second. And Todd Blackledge kind of kidded and said, well, I guess he thinks he can run faster with it off. And so once again, that was play four of the ball game is the reason I'm pointing it out in case people miss that. I mean, he just got hurt 2 weeks ago. It just seems kind of early to me to be to yanking it off on the fourth play of the game.
Well, and it could be something as you know, presumably insignificant as, you know, it just wasn't taped right and it was pinching him in some way. Those are the types of things that
we'll never know.
It's interesting to think about, and not a lot of people even think about that kind of thing or even notice it in the first place. But it's the kind of thing that all you can do is wonder about it, but it's fun to kind of do that too, though.
It is. What did you think real quick about Saban going for it on that first drive, you know, when he had it fourth and one there?
I think that's a statement play. You know, Mississippi State comes in with all of this, we believe. They've got, you know, banners proclaiming that they're the state champion of Alabama because they've beat, you know, Auburn this year and Troy and South Alabama, whoever it is. You know, I think it's a statement. You know, they're putting T-shirts on the Saban trophy and or a statue. And
yeah,
on,
that was real
on the
classy.
Bryant statue. And so you have to think, you know, fans, we don't need any of that. You know, they're already going to be brawled up enough. And so I think with all of that sort of nonsense, I think Saban just challenged, you know, I think he challenged the manhood of the team.
Well, it was just un-Saban-like, you know, to go for it on fourth. On the one hand, it was un-Saban-like to go for it. But also, we talked about this with our field goal kicking. It was fourth and one at the 37, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you attempt it, it's a 54-yarder. And maybe he's just not comfortable with if Kate had been nailing those last week, maybe he comes in and just puts points on the board.
Well, hey, let's.
But instead, maybe he changed the call because of that.
Well, let's call out our own observation. And I think you pointed it out last week, is how does Cade struggling potentially impact some of our play calling? Well, there you go.
Yeah. Hey, what else jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball? I thought the play action pass, you know, when I was enjoying the first quarter, it was working extremely well.
Well, I love the play action pass to Kenny Bell and you know, one of our friends, Greg, and he's been a contributor to the site as well. He texted me during the game, you know, there's your one trick pony. I want to be very clear. I like Kenny Bell's trick. If he just has one, I like it.
Well, the speed that he must possess, because he ran by in the Missouri game, right? He ran by their best corner. And, you know, the secondary had, you know, Mississippi State came in with two very good cornerbacks, Banks being the best one of the two. And he ran by him. And, you know, 15-yard line, Banks is not even reaching his hands out. He's just putting his hands by his side. His head's dropping down.
Yep.
And he's like, I don't have a chance in hell of catching this guy.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to dive because I'm going to dive and look stupid because I'm just going to grab air if I dive.
Yeah, and that's the photo that I have that's going to accompany the show notes. It's him pulling away from a defensive back that has his head hung, and you think, gosh, pretty early we're demoralizing, you know, what many would consider a strength of their team, their cornerbacks.
Well, hey, there was one other play that I noticed on that second drive where we completed a pass to Michael Williams there for the touchdown. We talked in the Tennessee game about their secondary and some of the just bonehead plays, and this was on Jonathan Banks. But I'm sure you noticed that we had three wide receivers to the field side, and we had Williams lined up tight at tight end. And the two safeties both rotate over in motion to the right side. And so they had three cornerbacks and two safeties covering. They had five guys covering our three wide receivers. And Banks thought he was going to have help in the middle. And so that's probably the easiest touchdown Michael Williams has had his whole career.
Absolutely.
He ran in. There was nobody there.
Yeah, he was expecting help there. And it just wasn't coming because they were so concentrated on the other side. And we've gone to Michael Williams some this year. We haven't maybe relied on him like maybe we did Brad Smalley last year and other guys in years past.
Which is a good thing. We haven't had to, right?
We haven't had to, and that's right. But I just think what that does is it opens up the opportunity for him to sneak out and make plays like that. And so he didn't have a whole lot of yards. He only had 38 yards, but he had five catches, which is a career high for him. Which I was a little bit surprised that his career high was that low. But he had a career high with his reception and a touchdown. I thought he was something of a weapon.
He was. I think he had a really good ball game, and it's just nice. It just shows AJ. To me, it points out to this whole talk of AJ game manager. You know, one of the stupid reporters asked this question in the press conference. You know, stop calling him a game manager. He's not a gunslinger. He's no Brett Favre. He's far from it. But this guy makes great decisions. And Tennessee was trying things, and he caught him in it. And he noticed that safety roll over the top, and he saw that Jonathan Banks was out wide. He wasn't even in front of the tight end. He was 5 yards off of him. Mm-hmm. And so his ability to look at the receivers and give them the face guard sign if they're getting press coverage, his ability. I mean, he's not checking. I thought we'd see more audibles at the line of scrimmage this year, right? Because we talked last year about, oh, he's progressing and coach is going to give him more free latitude to do that. I haven't noticed a ton of audibles, but I have noticed him going through his progressions, very comfortable, very patient, and he's going to his third and fourth guy a lot of times.
Yeah, he really is. And just the way he's developed the last, you know, season and a half has really just been phenomenal. Now, you say he's not a gunslinger, he's not a Brett Favre, and I can't disagree with that. I can't say that he is, but I will say he's got a little of that in him. What I see is that's contained, and it's, you know, the coaches have reined him in because we've
Saban contained it on national TV last year.
Well, sure, but we've seen some of that. He threw a pass last year at Penn State that I don't think that was. You know, I don't think he threw it where the coaches wanted to throw it, but it ended up being a touchdown because he was able to throw it through a very narrow and closing window.
Right.
I think he's got it in him. I think that what you have is you have some players that'll have an arm like that. They'll trust that arm. They don't get the coaching and the development, and so they just continue to sort of rely and fall back on that. And so you have like a Tyler Bray that is very talented, but he's prone to throw the interception. But then on the counter side, you take someone that has that talent, but is willing to you know, be a little bit subservient to the coach, to the offense, to the other strengths of the team, and then develop within that model. Then you have a little bit of the best of both, because he can fling it, but he does that in a controlled fashion. And you hear so much about, you know, these players coming into the NFL, but they almost have to relearn how to not just rely to their one strength. It's the one strength that got him there. I feel like he's so much further ahead. And when these NFL scouts, and I hope he doesn't go pro after this season, I hope he comes back. But one thing that will be fun to listen to when he does declare, and again, I hope it's next year, is all of the scouts saying, hey, this guy's better than we thought based on his production, based on his numbers. And you can see the career arc over his tenure at Alabama and his growth and his development. I know in the stands, I see it. And so if you were to go back and with a truly trained eye and break down his game tape, man, it's an amazing progression that he's demonstrated.
Oh, it is. And just to highlight the, you know, going through his progressions and getting all these people involved, you know, once again, right? 16 of 23, okay, 200 yards. You know, which has been his norm, right? Typically not 300 yards like he did last week. But here's the thing that to me is so great. is we have all these non-stars. And, well, everybody else in the country knows how good they are, but they have bought the – they've drank the Kool-Aid of the team approach. And so take Kenny Bell real quick. He had that one dazzling play, one catch, 57 yards, one touchdown. But guess what? He's happy, right? Sure. Chris John Jones, one catch. Kevin Norwood, one catch. And so my point is 1 week you'll have somebody load up four or five, and everybody else will get one or two. Then the next week, it's like, okay, we got a new person. I mean, last week, now granted, Cooper might have had more if he wouldn't have got hurt. But like you said, Michael Williams had five today, right, to lead the receivers. And so it's like just – it's the whole take what the defense gives you. If you're going to give me Michael Williams five times, I'll take Michael Williams five times.
Well, it's almost – And he kind of comes from the – Saban does – from the Belichick tree. And one of the things they talk about, you know, Belichick, and not so much the last couple of years, but, you know, generally they talk about him and Brady being a game plan offense. You know, what are they good at? Whatever you're allowing. And so, you know, whatever, you know, on defense, whatever you want to give us today, that's what we're going to be really good at. And so we're going to throw to the tight end five times, score a touchdown that way. We're going to stretch the ball down the field. Oh, this massive power running game that has everyone on pins and needles. We didn't even break 150 yards on the ground. You know, really didn't look good running the ball, but we still got up on you 24-0 and beat you in a very convincing fashion without a dominant running game. And so what are we going to be good at? Whatever you're pitching.
That's what's so scary about this team. I mean, I had called it 31-17, and obviously, had we executed like we should have, we would have hung another 50, or the ability to hang another 50 like we had the ability against Tennessee. You know, when I talk about the most frustrating quarter real quick, you know, you talked about the three punts. Yes, we come back and get that quick field goal because, you know, in that two-minute offense, but we only had the ball twice in the third quarter. And we punted those two.
Yep.
So technically it's like, okay, three touchdowns, then three punts, 2 minute field goal, two more punts. And then, okay, in the fourth quarter, we get two more touchdowns. But it was like two good quarters sandwiched around two crappy quarters.
Right.
What else jumped out at you on offense there?
I've got really one more thing I want to hit on offense. And I know this is a topic that you don't like or you've grown to dislike. But okay. I want to try to package this a little different. And I'm not going to change your mind, but if I can get you to just dip your toe in this idea. So Blake Sims comes in as the backup quarterback. He has three rushes, 19 yards, attempts no passes. So he's the backup quarterback, right? Well, Philip Ealy comes in. He throws for a touchdown pass. And so we score 14 points with McCarron out. One's a Blake Sims handoff to Drake. And a Philip Ealy throws a 27-yard pass to Lacy. So they both score a touchdown.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I gotta pause you a quick second. If you're Mississippi State and we believe, right, you apparently knock out our quarterback to run to the locker room. You've shut us down for two quarters, and our two backups – who really haven't played all year are the ones that put the nails in the coffin?
Well, that
really?
Well, that goes back to a Barrett Jones quote. You know, he said, we sort of took their hope away early, which I think is a great quote for him to say. And so you kind of have a little bit of that going on. But here's what I find fascinating, and I pick up a little bit of this, and you may have seen this in one of the Saban press conferences. He talks about Blake Sims being a great 4 minute, you know, you talk about the 2 minute drill, but the 4 minute drill where you're taking the air out of the ball. And Saban talked about Blake Sims being a great 4 minute drill quarterback because he's going to run, but he's another player for the defense to have to consider in terms of the run. And that really got me thinking because we specifically said at the beginning of the season, Saban likes to have starters and he has like layers of starters. And we kidded, but I think we both would agree that Jalston Fowler was going to be, amongst his many roles, was going to be the starting take the air out of the ball running back. Well, so now we don't have Fowler. I know you're not a big fan of the zone read, but is that an interesting way to look at that as without Fowler, the big bruising, you know, 250-pound running back, that we're going to accomplish a four-minute offense by bringing in a zone read running quarterback?
I really appreciate how you package that, but I'm not going to – I don't agree. I think we could accomplish that with Philip Ely handing it off to Kenyon Drake, who finished with 8 carries for 5.9 yards, and he can be that guy. He can be Fowler right now. And so does it speak to Mississippi State that we talked about the fact that now that we are telegraphing, Blake Sims, you come in, you're going to zone read. Ely, if and when you come in, you're going to, he has been handing the ball off and he just got his fourth pass attempt and it lucked out for a touchdown. But I don't like that we're bringing in Sims and he runs every time. And then when Ely came in, he passed the ball. I think we need to have a second string guy. We need to figure out who it is. He needs to be the guy. He needs to be getting a quarter and a half of playing time in these blowouts. And so if Sims is the guy, because we're not at practice and we can't see these things, then let him be your guy and let him start throwing the ball some. So I think Drake is your take the air out of the ball guy. He showed me some really great things that, we could talk for 2 hours if we wanted to about this stuff. I mean, Kenyon Drake showed the ability to go in between the tackles, developing that part of his game as opposed to just bouncing it outside. And I really enjoyed watching that. And, he had 8 carries, just almost as many as Yeldon and Lacey did. And I don't begrudge Blake Sims. He comes in and tries. I'm surprised that he must be the second string guy, because for him to come in when AJ went out and we got the ball back quicker than we expected, I mean, would you agree? Sims has got to be the guy.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, there's always that just sliver of doubt. What if something had happened in the second quarter and, who would have played the most snaps the rest of the game if it were a true, I don't know. And so that's what's intriguing to me is, and it's easy to kind of look at it and say, well, it's got to be Sims because he's kind of the first one off. I just don't know. If it were a prolonged situation, which one would get the most reps? I don't know. Maybe we'd go through, heaven help us, we don't have to experience this.
Oh gosh, don't.
But if we had backups play 3/4 of a game, would we even be closer to determine who's the backup in that situation? Because they might would rotate series or something. I don't
know. That's what I thought you were going to say.
And so to me, I think maybe we just situationally have backups. And I'm going to say this, and again, I'm not going to change your mind, but I just want to make sure that, we're putting cards on the table and it's an interesting discussion. Blake Sims coming in. Okay. We could line me up at the quarterback and hand off to a running back and that be the 4-minute offense. And that we're just going to pound the ball on the ground. And until you have a battering ram, kind of running back. And that probably works when you have 5 or 6 healthy running backs and one of them's a 250-pound bruiser. But when your third running back, who is also a freshman, I don't think when your depth is that slight that you can do that, that you need to preserve his strength, that you need to preserve him from injury. And so bringing in, doing something for us that is unconventional, but running that zone read and having some success at it, but doing that, now it may have run its course because we're predictable, all of that I understand, but I think philosophically, to save carries on Drake from being a battering ram, because we may need him in other situations later, I just think it's a creative way to solve a need.
I'll give you that.
All right. I'm going to switch to defense really quickly then on that note.
Okay.
What
you got on defense?
Well, what caught your eye on defense?
First thing that caught my eye was Duvall.
Yeah.
First of all, for those, Duvall has been coming in with the second string. He was coming in with the third string, and then he went to the second stringers, and he was in on the second defensive series.
And he's probably in earlier and earlier.
Yeah, and my favorite play of his was actually he was rushing on the edge, and he was rushing on the right tackle, and I think it was like a 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7 kind of play, and we actually had him on one side. We actually had Dial on the other side, and whenever Dial literally just pushed the running back into the quarterback, and so the quarterback, he really had nowhere he could go. Tyler Russell had nothing he could do with the ball. So then Duvall comes and beats the right tackle as well, and just picks him up and slams him. And you know how much I love that aggressive play instead of just, you know, when you get a shot on the quarterback, take it. But I just think that he's just getting better and better.
He really is. And he's one of the guys, and I've said this before, you know, in some of the recruiting reports on him, his high school coach in at least one of the interviews that I saw, you know, it was back before he committed to us, and he was, you know, looking around, and A&M was one of the schools that he was thinking about. His high school coach, you know, described him as a violent tackler. And I just love that language. And it seems that he's bringing some of that to bear, getting into the rotation. Again, it's situational. We play a lot of players situationally on defense, but he's one of those guys. And it's, you know, you could say this about a lot of guys that are not defense because we recruit, you know, a lot of talent. And so, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that we're scouts or that, you know, that we're figuring this stuff out ahead of anyone else, but he is flashing like Mosley did. They're different players. They do different things, but he's flashing like Mosley did when Mosley was getting spot duty. And we were able to tell, you know, this guy, keep an eye on this guy. Well, Denzel Duvall to me is keep an eye on this guy.
Well, and now I'm going to give you some credit here. So I hope you're sitting down. When we were talking in the preseason about the potential breakout freshman, you know, everybody was talking Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson was all the pub, right? He was the highly regarded guy. He had the physicals, the height, weight distribution to plug the middle linebacker as a backup. And it looks like he's going to be redshirted. He hasn't even played. And then Reggie Ragland, you know, who's been on special teams, who's got a good makeup as well. Mm-hmm. You know, those were the two guys everybody was talking about, right? Well, you called out Duvall and you said, hey, don't forget this guy. Mm-hmm. This guy's, I think, has got the makeup as well. He's that 6'3", 245, 250 guy. Well, unlike Ragland and Anderson, who I think were primarily linebackers, Duvall, which is what's interesting to me, he might be able to develop into that Jack linebacker, Courtney Upshaw situation like a Xavier Dixon. Because sure. Not only is he playing earlier, but I don't know if you noticed, he actually got to play standing up with his hands out of the dirt.
Sure.
In some of the game that, today.
He's almost
got to
that.
Do some of that. So
he was almost that Hightower sort of rabbit rusher.
Yeah.
You know, when we go to a nickel, he comes in and does that. So he's...
And that's a better analogy than Courtney Upshaw even is that he's got that ability to push the tackle, right, and push the pocket and got that burst and that strength off the edge. Because let's face it, Upshaw wasn't comfortable with his hands out of the dirt. And so he's got the ability, in my opinion, to do a little bit of both. And so I agree with your assessment of a C.J. Mosley, and I just want to put it out there that you talked about this in the preseason, that just like we were happy with Dixon last year, I think when you come back and look at this class, he might be, with Yeldon on offense and Cooper on offense, he might be the third top recruit of the impact as a freshman on this roster.
That's interesting. There are definitely some other impact players. I would most definitely put Drake as an impact player, although he does a lot of his work, you know, when the game's decided. And so when you think about while the game's, I'm kind of reacting real time, you know, while the game is still live, Denzel is evolving into that only because he's starting to get snaps early. So that's an interesting point. Maybe, you know, maybe after those two, he is the next one in terms of making impact plays while the game is still, you know, a game.
Hey, what else jumped out at you on defense?
Well, I don't want to be a stat nerd, but I'm going to for a minute. Mississippi State gained 256 yards, which that's a big number, and so we don't like that. But they had a 97-yard drive, which ended with the Lester interception, which was phenomenal. And they had a 63-yard drive. Non-play drive that yielded a touchdown. So if you take away those two drives, they gained 96 yards on the game. The rest of the game.
That sounds a little better. I like the way that sounds.
Yeah, that sounds a lot better. And they gained 209 yards passing, which I thought that was a little bit interesting. We, you know, I don't know that they have a real strong running game anyways, but we definitely stood up and took care of their running game, forced them to pass a little bit. They have an adept passer. They have a good passer. And so that's interesting. And so I just want to snapshot that statement because I don't want to talk about LSU just yet, but I just want to snapshot that we shut down Mississippi State's run, forced them to pass. That's what we're going to do against LSU.
Well, let's go back for a second, okay? Perkins was no chopped liver. Perkins is now, I don't know what he was ranked before this game, but he is now ranked 35th in the nation in rushing at 95 yards a game. So I know he was averaging over 100 yards a game coming into this ball game. Now, granted, they haven't played the level of opponents that we've talked about that before, but he was coming into this game averaging over 100 yards on the ground.
Yeah, and maybe I said that with less respect than intended. We
I'm just saying we shut down a pretty good rusher, yes, who ended up only having 15 carries for 40 yards, a measly 2 yards a carry.
Yeah, I think our game plan was to shut down the run, which I guess I'm saying we did. And so yeah, we were successful against that objective. They have a better quarterback. I'm not going to say he's the best one we've seen this year, but you know, upper half anyways. He is a good quarterback.
Maybe tied for first. Him and Bray. I mean, with the injuries that the opponents have had, I'd put him right there with Tennessee, right behind, right up behind Tennessee's quarterback.
Okay, well then that's fine, and you know, he kind of makes better decisions than Bray does, and so yeah, that's fair. Okay, so we put him up there as one of the better quarterbacks that we've played, and our game plan was to really just let him pass and let our defensive backs, you know, take care of him because we're going to settle on taking care of the run. The plays that the drives that they were able to sustain, and it's almost, you know, this is, you know, Saban style of defense is we're going to take some things away. And if you can drive the field on us, good for you. And it turns out that this quarterback was able to do that. And not many will, not many can, and not many will.
No. And just to give Todd Blackledge some more credit, because we've gotten to have him commentary to do color commentary 2 weeks in a row now. He talked about it in the second quarter, and everybody watching the TV at home, you know, remembers this. But it was on a series in the second quarter where we blitzed Robert Lester and Vinny from his blind side right in his face on like a 3rd and 6. And as soon as we brought the blitz, it forced the hot read right away. What does Blue do? Blue leaves his man before the ball is even released, leaves his man and comes and tackles the guy for a 3 yard gain. He doesn't even get to the sticks. They punt the ball. And Todd was talking about, man, look at that. They force you into the hot, and they're already ready to shut it down. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there and watching the replay thinking, you know, if a quarterback had the ability to just do a pump fake there and shift to the right and just throw it, you know, just get it away, right? Just get it away down the field 30 yards, he would have had a touchdown. Because literally, Ballou left his man before the ball had even been thrown by the quarterback.
Yeah.
That shows how they're, you know, we're going to force you to do what we want you to do, and we're already ready. We know what you're going to do, and we know how we're going to stop it.
Yeah, I think I can't remember. Maybe it was Sports Reporters, and I'm not a big fan of Lupica, but he's kind of smart alecky, and I think that, you know, maybe he made the comment that, you know, Saban, you know, the Alabama defense, you know, they were talking about there was a guy open. Why wasn't Alabama, if there's such this good defense, why weren't they covering him? And, you know, kind of snarky, the response was, well, Alabama's not going to cover the guy you're not going to throw to.
I like that.
So hey, I thought that was a pretty good comment, but it does speak to
what we just said. Yeah.
You know, I'm covering this guy. I know what we're doing blitzing here, and I know who the hot is. And so after a count of one, a count of two, a count of three, a count of four, I'm going to go get the hot.
And this is the right talked about him, yes, picking up more of the schemes going into the season. Yep. Hey, I have held this back long enough, but I'm still very frustrated with Nick Perry and Ha Ha. I'll throw Vinny in there and just simply say there was a couple times Vinny was exposed because he got caught in coverage and was part of the zone and wasn't at the line of scrimmage, which is where I think his comfort level is. And so a couple times he got beat on a couple plays on the offensive yards they did have. But specifically for a second, on that big play in the first quarter on their opening drive, And Todd Blackledge even highlights this, that Ha-Ha either underestimated the arm strength or he was trying to go for where he thought the angle was to get the interception. But I went back and watched it two or three times. He had plenty of time. D. Milner had help over the top. He was given the guy room, and Ha-Ha doesn't even get the ball. He just whiffs, and they get a big play, and then thank goodness Milner blocks the field goal. But how many times this year have we talked about Ha-Ha, and he either gets lost or he just gets distracted or something in the back of that defense? He's just not giving me that comfort level back there.
Not yet. He's not there, and he was certainly a highly recruited guy. I think the staff still thinks a lot of him. I think he's going to continue to develop.
I'm not saying I don't. He's got the height, he's got the weight, he's got the speed, he's got the measurables. I'm just saying I don't know what it is where it just seems sometimes he's a little late to the ball.
He just might be one of those guys, you know, like Lester kind of came from nowhere. And you can't hardly get him off the field now. He's one of those guys that's really emerged and playing very well, you know, going to get paid to do it on Sundays. You know, Ha-Ha just may be one of those guys that, man, it's just not all clicking. But one day it's just one of those things. It's a difficult scheme and you don't get it and you don't get it. But just one day.
You got it.
It just all crystallizes. And so he could be a guy midway through spring drills where, I get it now. And so I'm kind of hoping, but it's a tough defense. Everyone knows that. It's tough in the secondary. We put a lot of pressure on those guys back there. You know, and a coach does as well. I think it'll break for him. He's still just getting it in pieces right now.
Well, when you say, when you just made the comment about, you know, coach helps them, your exact wording there of coach helping them get it, you know, we didn't have the up close view of this at the stadium like we do in the replay at home. But man, on that particular series, Saban made sure he knew about it when Mississippi State was forced to call a timeout there before the blocked field goal. And then late in the game, I just want to touch on this for just a quick second. Whenever we had the third string guys in there, and you know we were trying to keep them out of the end zone, there was another opportunity for a young player to make a play and to watch his part of the zone, and Geno Smith did not. And I thought it was Nico. You thought it was Nico. I went back and watched the tape. It was actually Tyler Hayes that was in there right there at that very end. And, buddy, it was Geno Smith. And Geno Smith is the guy that left his guy for that, you know, touchdown pass. And, boy, Saban's – I mean, his blood was boiling. And the sideline reporter was like, and they're up 38-0.
Well, I think a couple – you know, there's a couple things. We've talked about that's why we're good. And that's why, you know, a Saban coach defense is going to be good, because there's not a learning opportunity that is skipped. Or, you know, not highlighted.
This now, was not skipped.
I'll say this, and this is pretty clear, and I don't mean it funny, but maybe it'll sound that way. The coaching moments in game are a little more emphatic than, you know, than they would be in practice. And I think clearly, well, it's a game and a game's on the line. Sure, all of that's true. But here's why I think the coach is a little more emphatic, in addition to just the emotion of game day. Coach is not going to put a player on the field to perform a task that he doesn't think he can do. And so what that means is he's making that play in practice. I don't attend all the practices, so I don't know, but that's my theory. Coach isn't going to put a player out there that, you know, that he knows is going to fail. And so when he misses a play like that, I told you what they were going to do is what comes to mind. You've done this during practice. Why would you not do it right in a game? I think that's why it's so frustrating to coach. And that's why we see that with the backups, because, you know, that's what they are. They're backups. They don't have the experience. And so when they do have that blown call, and what's interesting is it's almost the exact same thing, you know, situationally different maybe, but it's very similar to what we talked about Ballou doing, leaving his receiver to come cover the hot.
Well, yes.
It's almost like Geno did the same thing. He left his receiver to cover someone else, except for they threw to his receiver. And so it's, you know,
guess wrong.
And so, no, it's a count of five before you leave, not four. You know, it's almost because he has it down to such a science, coach does, of the keys and the steps that you take and the angles that you take and the hand placement and every little thing, that it literally is probably something as, I don't want to call it simple because it yielded a big play, but something as simple as it's a five count, not a three and a half count.
Right. No, that's true. The anything else that jumped out at you on the defensive side of the ball?
No, I like the Lester interception in the end zone. They drive the field 97 yards. We pick it off in the end zone. I think, what, that's 2 weeks in a row that he's had a pick in the end zone.
In very dramatic fashion. I mean, that was a big moment in time for that to happen, and it actually looked like he was kind of coming off of the guy on the slant to pick up that route. I don't know if he was – I couldn't tell if they were – it looked like they were in man, and so I don't know if he was helping somebody out in that play, but it did look like he was peeling off of one guy to cover another one.
Sure. And it's just, you know, we talk about demoralizing defensive plays. You drive the field 97 yards, you are expecting to score a touchdown. It is your mentality that we are scoring a touchdown. Oh, shit, we're not scoring a touchdown.
And you know, Saban obviously talked about that was a big momentum swing in the game. But, you know, like you said, at that point in the game, right, that's huge.
Sure.
Not that they would have won, but it could have been a different, more competitive game had that not occurred.
Well, sure, they get that touchdown and they get the field goal on the block that Milner had. You know, it's a 17 to 31 point, you know, ball game. That's a 2-score game. That's significant.
Oh, it is. Hey, is there anything else that jumped out at you on defense?
Not so much defense. Why don't we take a look at special teams?
Well, special teams, I first want to start with Cyrus. I think Cyrus Jones, you know, we didn't get to see practice in the preseason or in fall camp and how he was going to be able to step in. But, you know, just talking about the depth of this team to have a Chris John Jones and have some of the plays that he made last year thrust into that role as a freshman. And now Cyrus Jones coming, you know, week two here, really putting the team in some great field position. I mean, I'm just, you know, not only kick returns, but punt returns. He's showing some good burst. He's showing some vision. He's hitting the holes at the right time. You know, I'm pretty impressed with his short body of work.
Yeah, I really am too. You know, the 41-yard return to open the game, you know, coming out ready to play, having some emotion from the jump. He's an exciting player. I think, you know, before it's all said and done, we probably will see some Christian Jones back there as well. Christian kind of gave a very similar spark last year. So other than a couple of bad decisions, I'm not really, you know, down on his upside. He just needs to not make the mental mistakes. Or Cyrus is not making those mental mistakes, which is keeping him on the field. So I was very pleased to see that. Milliner with a blocked field goal. And any time that you can do, again, that's a demoralizing play. You know, guys, we're going to get points. We're going to do something positive that we can hang a hat on. You know, we're going to chop some wood here, get some points, see what we can do. Crap, we're not, because we, you know, we screwed up and we let this guy get in here and block a kick. And that's just very demoralizing. That's 10 points right there that are worth more in their emotional loss to Mississippi State than 10 points.
It is. I was not impressed with our kickoff coverage.
No.
Just to call Vinny out for a quick second, and one of the only ones I got to go back and look at, He didn't fill his lane. He kind of bled over to Ha-Ha and let one guy block him and Ha-Ha just long enough to spring the guy on one of the returns. He was not alone in this by any means, but when you look back at the line sheet and you notice that they had a long of 37, a long of 39, a long of 33, that just can't happen.
Right, right. No, that's a struggle point. You know, we're going to have to continue to work on that. What'd you think about Fulton down in a punt inside the two?
Man, I thought that was a hell of a play. I think he has continued to progress on special teams. He is making, you know, he's one of the first ones down the field on the kickoff coverage, gunner at punt return. But just his presence of being able to turn around, know where the ball is, or look up forward and make the play, that was a big play. And I'm happy that he's contributing the way he is on special teams.
Sure. And I think both of us, if we were honest, we could comment that, you know, maybe a little bit disappointed at his development at cornerback. But, you know, let's call progress where we see it. Last year, we were disappointed with some of his plays on special teams. And so this year to come in, you know, he's not a world beater every day on special teams, but he's definitely showing flashes. And to make a big play like this, again, that's material to a ball game.
It is material to a ball game. And while we're talking about progression, we would be remiss if we did not talk about Cody Mendel. And I think Cody had probably his best game as an Alabama punter. What was it, two back-to-back career-long 60 yards or 61 yarders that he had back-to-back in this ball game?
Yeah, he definitely had some booming punts, and that's an appropriate call-out. He had a great deal of success on Saturday, and so, yeah, that's a good call. That's a good hats off on Cody. I'm a little bit disappointed with the kickoffs. I think we're getting a little stiff in our hips. I think we're losing some of that form that we were enjoying earlier in the season. I don't know what the dynamic there is, but you know, we need to get back to that. We were kicking them routinely out of the end, or at least into the end zone, and we seem to have struggled to do that the last couple of weeks.
Hey, let me go back and just say this exactly correct on Cody Mendel. I'm going to be a stats nerd for a quick second. When we were struggling in the second quarter and not being able to finish, he proceeds to punt the first punt when we're up 21-0, 38 yards, fair catch, 6-yard line by Mississippi State, pins him in deep. Next one, 59 yards. Next one, 61 yards down at the five-yard line. Next one was the in the third quarter, he proceeds to kick the 34 yards that gets down at the two. So he had a 59-yard punt, a 61-yard punt, and then, oh, by the way, in the third quarter is when we downed it at the two. I mean, that is huge. I mean, that is three punts. You know, he only had five punts on the game. He had five punts in a row.
Sure.
And all of them were spot on. So that is by far his best game. Well, anything else on special teams that jumps out?
I'm just going to call out and you know, I seem that I noticed this. I want to make sure there were some other eyes that noticed this as well. I did not see Yeldon participating on special teams like I have, you know, to this point in the season. Did I just missee that, or was he just not out there?
I do not think he was out there. You and I had talked about that during the game, and you had brought that to my attention. Typically, when he is out there, he's going to contribute on the stat sheet. He is not on the stat sheet at all for even an assist. And when you and I took the binoculars and checked it out, we did not see that. I did not look on the punt return as carefully as kickoff return, but I do not recall him on the kickoff return.
Well, I'm glad to hear that someone in the office is listening to the podcast, I guess, huh?
as low on the totem pole as they might be, I'm glad that intern is listening. Allowing him to listen on the way home.
That's right.
Hey, going to game balls here. Yep. Who would get your mini game ball on offense?
Well, I probably got a shocker for you on my offensive game ball. I'm giving it to Philip Ealy. You know, we've talked about the backup quarterback, and he's not that. We've been pretty emphatic, or you know, maybe you more than I have. I don't know, and you're a little more emphatic that it's Blake. However, we start to answer those questions, even not knowing, kind of speaks to him being jerked around a little bit, you know, not interpersonally, but just situationally. And, you know, he came in, ready, was ready to play when it was his turn. I think the backups came in earlier than people were expecting because we had this situation with McCarron going out, but Phillip throwing that touchdown, that was impressive. I was pleased to see it. It looked like a good ball. I'm just tipping ahead to the redshirt freshman quarterback.
Well, it definitely would have looked a little prettier if Lacey would have called it the first time instead of tipping it back to himself. But right. but it is like, okay, I've only attempted three passes all season. I just came in the game. I know they called a play because I brought the play in from the sideline. And he made, you know, he turned it into a touchdown. So sure.
Ready to execute it, and he did. You know, like you said, the bobble catch I don't think was necessarily his fault. So, you know, hats off to Phillip.
Hey, mine's going to be a somewhat of a headliner guy, but I don't care because I think he deserves it. And that's going to be Michael Williams. And I'm not giving it to him for his five catches, career high, gets a touchdown. I'm giving it for him doing the dirty work. And here's what I want to point out. We have been blessed with a couple good blocking tight ends for the past several years. And this year we came in and we really had some unknowns. We had Brent Callaway playing some H-back. We had this walk-on Kelly Johnson who really, you know, he's small for the size. Harrison Jones and Brian Vogler, they're still small for the physical tight ends that we're used to, right? The size of an offensive guard.
Well, and so, we thought we were going to have Fowler too.
But Michael Williams, I guess what I'm saying is he's the only big tight end we have.
Sure.
He's the only bruiser. And he knows the playbook like the back of his hand because he is H-back behind Fluker. He is H-back behind Cyrus. Go shift into the fullback in the eye. Go split out at a split end and run a slant. I mean, but then on the running plays, he's all over the backfield. And this time I want you to trap. And this time I want you to pull to the right. And he just makes these integral kickout blocks. As a former offensive lineman, he just makes this game go without a Fowler, without a true fullback. And I don't think our running game would be nearly as successful right now if Michael Williams went down with an injury.
Sure. I agree with that. And I think that's a great call, and that's a great call out. He's doing so many things that don't show up in the stat sheet under, at least they don't show up under the stat sheet under his name, because they are there. They're just not, you know, externally credit given to him. So that's going to be a guy that a lot of just your casual fans will be surprised at where he's drafted. I didn't say he's going to be a first round pick. I'm just saying he's going to be, people will be surprised where he's drafted, you know, third, fourth, fifth round kind of guy that you would never think that that's where he's going to go. But, you know, some smart team is going to pick him up. And, you know,
and if he does what he's doing right now, he'll play a few years too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, I'm going to quickly pitch it back to you after giving you my mini game ball on defense. It's going to go to Duvall for all the reasons we talked about. I mean, his stat line was only two solos, but they were both tackles for loss. You know, he had a sack. He had two quarterback hurries. He's not getting a lot of plays, but he's getting earlier and earlier playing time, and he's just making a big splash, and it's just another guy. He wasn't one of those guys in the seven or eight deep that we were going to run at you. We're now running 11 or 12 at you, and he's just one of them.
Yeah, I had two guys underscored on offense, and so I went with sort of the lesser name of the two, and you took Michael Williams, the other one. So, you know, both, I feel like both of my guys got credit. And I've got two guys underscored on defense, and so probably the lesser of the two is Denzel. So I'm going to flip the script on you and go with more of the name player with my main game ball. This is sort of a fatty mini game ball, but I'm going to Lester. His pick in the end zone 2 weeks in a row doing that. That's just literally, you know, in Indiana Jones style, reaching in and ripping someone's heart out. That's the kind of play that he made, and that's the kind of defensive player that he has turned into. So, you know, he's a guy that we've tracked and enjoyed the last couple of years ago. Hard to believe that he came out of high school with Julio, that they were seniors together, because there's been so much separation in their career and Julio leaving early and such. But Lester's one of those fifth-year guys that just, you know, hats off. We're going to miss him.
We are going to miss him. Hey, what about special teams? Who are you giving it to on special teams?
I guess I'm going to give it to Cyrus for, you know what, I'm going to be a smart ass. I'm going to give it to Yeldon for not playing.
Well, I'm going to give it to Cody Mandel for the reasons we said, because I think it was top to bottom his best performance as an Alabama punter. Hey, what do you think about this next game? Do we have a big game coming up next week?
I hear that that we do, that we are taking on the LSU Tigers.
Careful how you said that, because we hear, right? But let's just go ahead and call this out. This is not going to be as close of a game, is it?
Well, here's what is amazing to me, and I'll just call this amazing. When the season opened, we play in Baton Rouge, so we play at their house. When the season opened, they were a 2-point favorite. Typically, you kind of get 3 for home field, especially if you have a sort of a known tough place to play. And so they were favored by 2, so that's almost a pick 'em. The line opened at 7. And it had moved to 8. I think I even saw somewhere it was 10. I don't know about that. But that's Bama favored by a lot of points on the road to the number 5 team in the country.
Well, you know, it's getting better, right? We were 24 points on the number 11 or 12 team this past week. So, no, all kidding aside, you know, this has been a very tough game for the last several games that we have faced them. But you and I have watched a lot of ball together this year, as with previous seasons, and I'm just not sold on the quarterback. You know, I got to give Lou Holtz some credit on this College Football Final show that you and I watch every week, and he was comparing the stat line, and he said at this point in the season last year, the combination of Jordan Jefferson and Jarrett Lee, which I can't stand the 2-quarterback system, was 12 touchdown passes to 1 interception. Yep. I wanted to go ahead and say this before you could steal it. And that at this point in the season, Zach Mettenberger is 7 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. And just, he is not comfortable in the pocket. His decision-making, he does not seem comfortable throwing the ball down the field. They let him do this a couple times against Texas A&M, which surprised me. But I really think it's going to come down to shutting down the run. And because they are not a balanced team, I don't think it's going to be a ball game.
Well, and I'm not
– I mean, LSU's defense is going to keep them in it real quick. Let me be clear. Well, but I just don't think they've got the offensive tools.
Let's spend an extra minute on this, and let's take one side of the ball at a time. And so when we're on defense and they're on offense, I don't disagree with you. They've got a freshman running back, Jonathan Hill, that has emerged the last few weeks. He's a strong runner. He's a big guy. I think we're going to focus on taking away the run. And so it's almost a big boy version of what we did against Mississippi State, because face it, LSU just has better athletes and they're deeper and they're a more talented team. They have had some injuries across their offensive line, which has hurt them. I think that we are going to – there's going to be shades of defensive game plans that we've seen before. And so shades of the Mississippi State game plan where we take away the run. Shades of the Michigan game plan where we let the quarterback throw the ball, contain him in the pocket, and let him throw the ball. Because same with Denard Robinson, you get the same thing with Zach Mettenberger. They throw at receivers instead of to receivers. And our defensive backfield, I think, is good enough to pick a couple of those off, bat a couple of those away. Here's the difference. With Denard Robinson, the key was to contain him in the pocket because he could kill you running. Zach Mettenberger, he's not that threat. And so not only do we keep him in the pocket to contain him, but we keep him in the pocket for easy hunting.
That's fair. And I think, I mean, LSU has got 5 running backs that are getting playing time.
Sure.
And they are all being effective.
Sure.
And they're all offensive talented. Line.
Jonathan Hill has impressed me, I think, the most of all of them.
Oh, sure. But they have got an offensive line that is typically very strong. They come into this game a respectable 25th in the nation, averaging 200 yards a game rushing the ball. But that passing offense comes in at 106. Right. And to your point, I don't think we're going to pressure him a lot. I think they think we're going to pressure him a lot. But just like you said with Mississippi State, there's not going to be a lot of blitzing. It's going to be opportune times, but we're not going to be blitzing this quarterback a whole lot.
No, but I think that, you know, rather than just, you know, and it was the perfect discussion that we had with Hubbard setting the edge and then playing contain against Denard, almost not going after him once I've set the edge and contained, we'll round the corner and we'll come after Zach.
Oh, no. No, that's true. We will take occasions to do that. But what do you think flipping it to the other side of the ball? Because LSU does have a very good defense. I mean, they come into this game, you know, it just like it was last year, right? I mean, they come in with a third-rate defense, the second in the nation on pass efficiency, with, you know, just right behind us at number one. And so this will be like the game within the game, right? For the football junkies, yep, of A.J. McCarron with his 18 touchdowns, no interceptions, right? Well, this is the true test. I'm going against the number two pass efficiency defense in the nation.
Yeah, I think the nuance here is going to be fun to watch. And again, I think there's shades of game plans that we've seen before. I think we're going to play, and some of it's what we do, you know, just, you know, because it's our style of play. But I think we're going to be ball control on offense. I think we're going to attack the middle. And I think we're going to attack their linebackers. They've had some injury there. That's where Florida really got after them. They struggled against power runs late against Florida. I think we have a relentless style. And so we're going to start to do that. So we're going to see a lot of traps and a lot of pulls. We're going to see, you know, Warmack and some of the other linemen really pull in to clear some holes so we can run up the middle, really attack those linebackers. I think we're going to see some of that. We're going to see some passes to the tight end, you know, maybe some naked boots with the tight end.
We did that in the national championship game against them pretty absolutely effectively.
But yeah. I tell you what we're going to see. We're going to see out of all of that, we're going to see some pretty effective play action. I don't know that we see sort of the flea flicker again, but we're going to see some pretty strong play action. And so, you know, Kenny Bell could get loose across the middle kind of play, simply because they're going to try to contain us to the line of scrimmage, and we're going to play close to the line of scrimmage, but then we're going to throw over them.
Well, it will be interesting if we do that, because in the first game last year, we ran the ball with Trent. In the national championship game, we didn't really give him as many carries, and we got all these guys involved on the edges in the passing game. So to your comment about the inside with Florida, if we do attack the middle of the field, it will be very different from what we did the last time that we faced them.
Well, it really will. And so what's interesting, and if I were LSU, I'd be a little bit nervous, because they did struggle against the power run that Florida offered. And then they struggled against the open passing attack that A&M offered. So I think that we have the ability to touch both of those bases with our style of play. Now, they have a massive and talented defensive line, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention their safety, Eric Reed. He's a guy that
he's a stud.
We talked to a great length about last year. And so they've got talent. I just think they're susceptible at the linebacker position. They've got injuries. And I think their quarterback, they're going to need to run screens and draws to slow us down, some short crosses. They're going to need to do what the Mississippi State quarterback did, which was sustain long drives. Mettenberger will not be able to sustain long drives. And so they'll get a first down, they'll get a couple plays, and they will feel compelled to throw the ball down the field, because – you know, it's almost like playing craps. We've gotten a couple numbers. We better get out of here before somebody rolls a seven and craps out. It's going to be like that. We've gotten a first down. We've gotten a second first down. We're on house money now. We're going to have to throw the ball down the field, and we're still at the 50, you know, kind of situation. I see them struggling to score points, and I have a lot of respect for their defense. So both of those factored in, I'm seeing a 23-3 type ball game.
23-3.
Yep.
Well, they're going to come in this game jacked up, right? After that national championship game and how all that turned out. I do think the defense is going to keep them in it. I do think that they've got eight defensive linemen who have played at least seven games. So they run depth at us like we do other teams that we have not faced all year. And so I think this will be the the first game this year that we don't, you know, have the margin that we've been having. I don't see them getting just three. I see them making a play on special teams because we have been susceptible to special teams. So I see them getting a touchdown there. I see them getting a couple field goals from just field position and just lucking into some stuff. And so I actually see a final score of 27-13. I see a 14-point margin, which would be our closest game, which is kind of funny to say that, but that'd be our closest game of the year.
Okay. I wish we were going to be able to go to Baton Rouge for it, but we'll be watching it on TV, and we'll have the TiVo and the DVRs working with the rewinds, and we'll drive our wives crazy. But that's how this game is going to go down. It'll be like a six-hour spectacular watching right. and replay and whatnot. So that will certainly be a good time. Tom, I want to call out just a couple of sort of mailbag type items before we drop today. I want to give a shout out to I'm going to give a website, RollTideDaily.com. They've added us. They have a great site, and I put a link in our show notes. And so if you're listening to this and you're interested in checking this out, go to the show notes at AlabamaFootballPodcast.com, link to it there so he'll know where the traffic's coming from. But he has a great sort of – there's a lot of news sites out there that have Alabama news. He sort of aggregates this into a single site. So it's a great resource to have handy sort of in your favorites. And so that's RollTideDaily.com. And I want to call out Anthony in, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, in Australia, dropped us an email. So just kind of paraphrasing some of his email, sent us some real kind words.
Sure, he did.
It talked about in the media, no one, and that's kind of all caps, the no one understands Alabama as well as you do. No one, again, in caps, breaks down plays in games like you do. No one, again, in caps, calls out underperforming players and questions coaching decisions like you do. Best available, comprehensive, in-depth analysis of Alabama football available as a podcast or print. So, Tom, I don't know that he said very much about you in any of that, but I'm certainly pleased with the positive response that we got from Down Under. So appreciate people reaching out to us via, you know, Facebook or our Twitter or iTunes or email, what have you. But we certainly encourage you to visit our website, AlabamaFootballPodcast.com. Sort of on the right-hand side, we have a sign-up so you can join, subscribe to our newsletter. And what I want to do for the balance of the season, we'll pick a couple of winners, but free Alabama football podcast T-shirts to those who, not everyone, we'll do a contest. We'll pick two or three winners from our email subscribers, pick those out randomly. So if before the end of the season, before that last game kicks off, if you'll go to our website, sign up for a newsletter, have a shot at winning one of our T-shirts.
Well, man, I appreciate the feedback, and also if anybody just wants to drop us a question before the podcast, we will try to cover that as well.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, it's been a lot of fun. We've got a big game coming up. I think we're going to validate our number one ranking, and it'll be an exciting game to watch. We hope everyone tunes in to the game and then checks out the podcast next week to see what we have to say about it. But we appreciate you dialing in. Went a little long tonight, but it was a lot of really good discussion, so we appreciate you sticking with us. Check us out at AlabamaFootballPodcast.com. Like I said, we're on iTunes. And thanks for listening. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, T-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at AlabamaFootballPodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.